Leadership is taking people on a journey where there's a vision, guidance, and purpose.
Good leaders lead with the heart as well as the head.
Leadership means doing the right thing for the right reason, no matter how difficult it might be.
You're listening to Leadership Unwrapped, a podcast where you will hear from people who are living leadership every day.
Hi, Niamh. Really interesting conversation with Chloe about self-compassion. Really got me thinking about how tough we can be on ourselves. And just taking that time to think about it and maybe to make it a more deliberative practice that we really reflect on being kinder to ourselves. I was just blown away when she talked about, you know, compassion being turning kindness inwards, really. Something that we don't do. We're usually doing it for everyone else and not thinking so much about how we do that for ourselves as well. So, yeah, I found that such an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it's something that like really stuck with me afterwards, and I was thinking about it, is how easy that we can naturally do it for other people, but how a lot of the time it has to be something much more intentional that we do for ourselves. So her highlighting this, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah. And I think the fact that she said, I think she was saying, you know, how would you speak to your friend about that? And that's the way that you should speak to yourself about it. You know, that sort of was a really simple technique, that a practical thing that you could use to stop yourself going into that negative thinking, that spiral of negative thinking about yourself. And such a practical technique, it just really struck me as really helpful. And I think the journal that she talks about is going to be really helpful for people.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see what comes out of Compassionate Co, her new company as well, because I really do think that the journal is just the start of what she's putting out, because even the content that she's giving, lots of, you know, insights and tips and things just for your day to day. And I know she mentioned that there's breathwork on the way, so it's a really exciting space that she's opening up.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And I know I said in the chat to her, I started out in my university part of my work from a health promotion perspective and teaching that area. And this was so, it brought me so back to it.
Yeah.
And it was really practical and it was so health promoting. I just loved the conversation.
Yeah. The fact as well that she brings it, like, you know, I know we speak about this, so I don't want to get into too much, but, you know, we were saying that it's the experience that she has, the passion that she has behind it, and then also her expertise in the area as well. I think it's like everything just came together in the right way for something like this to happen.
Yeah, and her journey is really moving.
Yes.
I didn't know her story until she talks about it in our conversation. I was really moved by her resilience and her determination. It's just incredible, really.
Yeah.
And that she's turning it into something really positive. It's really inspiring for
our
powerful. Listeners.
Yeah.
So listeners, hope you enjoy it. Our guest today is the wonderful Chloe Enright. She's a public health practitioner, passionate about public health, health promotion and mental health. And she recently launched a new business called Compassionate Co, which we're going to chat lots about over the next while. It's a mental health promotion business focusing on the concept of self-compassion and empowering others to become more self-compassionate, which links really closely to better health and well-being. Chloe, you bring a wealth of life experience to this important development. And during the podcast, we're hoping to chat to you a bit more about this. And we are so delighted that you managed to fit us into your busy schedule. So you're very welcome to chat to us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be on.
So we might start, Chloe, with just tell us a little bit about your background.
So I suppose as I was growing up, I always had a huge interest in health, but I wasn't sure what area I wanted to go into. So I did the public health BSc in UCC. And I have started my master's recently. Career-wise, I have experience in health communications and epidemiology. And I've been working in health research for the last number of years.
Okay. And you are also, while working full-time, I take it, now launching this business.
Absolutely, yeah. So Compassionate Co launched 4 weeks ago. Yeah, it's not even a month old.
Yeah.
So pretty new. Was kept very busy with the master's, working full-time.
Yeah,
and
it's like 3 full-time jobs.
Yeah. And launching the business, but very passionate about it, and in particular about the area of mental health. And that was the backstory, I suppose, to the development of Compassionate Co.
I'm really looking forward to hearing a bit more about the motivation behind this, which we'll chat about in a minute. But just give us a sense, where do you find the time to cover all these three things? How do you manage it?
Lots of early mornings.
Liam knows all about them. Yeah. I think it's the early mornings. Yeah. Like going to bed early. I'm in bed at 9 o'clock every night.
Wow.
I'm an early morning person. I'm really productive in the morning. So Yeah, it's just time management, like real, real stringent time management. So yeah, the master's work would be done in the morning because find a target to do it in the evening. And then the business prep, that was mostly in the morning as well.
Right, okay.
So I think when you're, but for the business, I think, and even for the master's, I really enjoy them and I'm passionate about them. So I think that when you have that element of passion and when you have that element of enjoyment, it does make it a lot easier to get up and do these things. It's not, you know, something that I don't enjoy.
And I think when you're motivated, when you can see the value of what you're doing and the value for other people too, I think it gives you that extra.
It gives you that push and that drive.
But it is a good structure. Like, I mean, I know not everyone is a morning person. Not everyone would want to get up. You know, some people just work better in the evenings or whatever. But like, you still have the evenings for yourself when you structure your day, that you're doing that kind of productivity piece at the start of the day, your working day, and then you still have the evenings to do whatever you want.
That's it, absolutely. And, you know, my work day with the HSC, it's done at 4:30. Mm-hmm. So my evenings are my own. And if I want to go, and I like having that, I think it's really important to have that protected time. And having that to meet near for a walk or whatever else it is, you know, I think it's important to have that downtime as well. So that's protected time for me, 100%. Yeah.
So I'm huge advocate for health promotion, and and when I started in the university, health promotion was the area that I was working in.
Right.
So I'm delighted to talk to a fellow health promoter. And what was that motivation to go into health promotion when you did your degree? What drew you to that?
I think throughout my teenage years, I always had a huge interest in health, like I mentioned, but it was more physical health. You know, I got into exercise and really healthy eating, and I initially wanted to do dietetics, but I knew that I had an interest in it, but I wanted something broader than that.
Okay.
And I think that public health as a discipline is really broad. Yeah. Like, you have the health promotion, health protection and epidemiology. So you have, it is a really broad degree, but you can make what you want of it.
Yeah,
and if you want to go into the disease surveillance, or if you want to go into the health protection, which is more your legislation, policy, procedures, or the health promotion aspect, public health is a really broad discipline that gives you the opportunity to go into any.
Yeah.
So I always had the interest in health promotion, but ended up working in health protection. And I always had that interest. And I think this is where the draw for Compassionate Co as well has come from, because I love health promotion and I love everything that it's about. And while health protection is really important, the three disciplines are as important as each other. You know, behaviour change is really important.
Yeah,
and that ultimately is what health promotion is about.
Yeah.
And that has really fit into Compassionate Co.
Yeah. And I think being thoughtful, you know, about what influences our thinking and around behaviour change, and what works and what doesn't work. Fairly complex.
Absolutely.
But really interesting.
Okay. It's a really interesting concept. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So let's talk business.
Okay.
And we've seen some of your what you're working in Compassionate Co, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah.
So maybe do you want to tell people what Compassionate Co is about first, and then we might talk specifically about the journey that brought you to that?
Sure, yeah. So Compassionate Co is a mindful-based intervention. It's a mental health promotion business, and it focuses primarily on the concept of self-compassion. So self-compassion is the process of turning kindness inward. Mm. And too often, you know, I think that we all have the skill of being compassionate and we're able to put it outwards to other people, but it's learning to turn that inward is really, really important. And it's a really important, I say, a coping skill, and it's a tool to have in your belt for dealing with difficulty, which we all do to varying degrees throughout our lifetime. And I suppose the overall objectives of Compassionate Co are to firstly focus on self-compassion as a concept, to enable people to learn the concept and to break it down a little bit. I suppose that's where my research skills and my analytical skills come in. I have the ability to interpret various information and break it down for people. So that also promoting open discussion about mental health. That's something that I feel
important.
Really passionate about.
Yep.
And based on my own story, you know, I think it's something really important that I want to integrate into the business. And also on that, to use my research skills to give people information about the burden of mental health within Ireland, that it's very much there and it's not spoken about enough. We've come really far, but not far enough, in my opinion. And so, yeah, it's a variety of things, but ultimately it comes under the umbrella term of mental health promotion.
And do you think, I love this turning kindness inwards, I love it.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a shortage of self-compassion? Is that what you think? Is that what's motivating you?
Yeah, 100%. And okay. I think that, you know, myself as a person, I didn't have it. I was really unself-compassionate, and it's something that I have learned, and that's why I feel so passionate about it since I have become educated on the concept and since I've learned it. Even being in a room with people, people are so critical of themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
And we automate to self-critiquing mode rather than self-compassion. But even when we are going through really difficult times, and it's, we all, like I said, we all know compassion. If I ask people, or if I ask either of you, have you been compassionate to a person in your life? You're more than likely going to say yes. So we all know how to do it, but it's just to learn how to turn that inward a little bit.
What is it that you think? And I know you, I don't know, you may or may not have an answer. I'm just wondering what you think of like why we find it easier to be compassionate to other people than to ourselves.
Yeah, good question.
I don't think there's one short answer to it.
No,
you know what I mean?
But just easy, when, but
yeah.
I think that we're our own worst self-critics.
Mm.
And I think that people think that self-critiquing is motivation.
Mm.
Some of the time, you know what I mean? I think that if you, in your own opinion, you're not doing enough in a certain task, if you say, oh no, I need to do more, and you're really pushing, and you're self-critiquing, people see that as motivation sometimes, and they draw on that. Whereas in actual fact, it has the opposite effect, in that it sparks up our nervous system and we become more, it's probably counterproductive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're making ourselves more agitated and more in situations, you know. But I suppose, Niamh, if I ask you, this is something that I draw on in the journal, if you're going through a difficult time, I say, write down what you would say to a friend in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to speak really differently to yourself than you would to a friend.
That's so true.
You know, and I think it's quite complex. Like I could,
oh, definitely, yeah.
I guess self-respect, self-acceptance, you know, self-love, but there's probably a lot of complexities going on there.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
could be broken down.
It's very easy to default into that self-criticism, isn't it?
It is.
Like it's
because it's the automatic, isn't it? Like if you're speaking to someone else, the automatic reaction is to be kinder and, you know, to try and
for sure,
you know, do whatever you can to help that person, whereas the automatic for yourself is a bit, I shouldn't have done that, like I drew this on myself because I did this. It's just interesting to think, like, I wonder, is there also an element of like the fear of being, I know we do this a lot in Ireland, like the fear of thinking you're great or, you know, people say, you know, I wonder, is that part of it? Like, as you say, Chloe, there's probably loads of things that feed into it that are, and very different for different people as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, it sort of becomes, it can very easily become the pattern too. You know, if you're harsh on yourself, and often when you're working, when I'm working with people, I hear how hard they are on themselves and they're doing amazing stuff. But it's always the bit that they haven't done that you focus on instead of all the amazing stuff. I'm guilty of it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the good stuff that you do. And I've often said to one or two colleagues, like, is there another stick you could find there now to beat yourself up with? Because you're doing so great. And I do it myself. So it's like, why are we wired into that negative so much more easily then? And maybe it is about, well, you don't want to be sounding too full of yourself. But there's more to it too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, it's funny even when you're talking to someone too, isn't it? Like, and if you were about to say something positive about yourself, you'd say, oh, I don't mean this now, and, you know, I'm not saying this to talk myself up, and then say it. Do you know, you give like almost that what would you say, like
that buffer into it, like
to glide
into a disclaimer, almost a
disclaimer, that's the word that I'm looking for, so you don't come across in a certain way. It's funny, you know,
it's probably the perfectionist in everybody too.
True.
Do you know, I actually, the book that I'm reading at the moment, it's on self-compassion, and there's a really good story in it that this girl, she baked a cake for her friend and she couldn't get the regular chocolate that she used, and the whole, you know, her friend was delighted with the cake, and the whole time during the party, Rachel, this girl, she couldn't focus on anything, only the fact that the cake wasn't as nice because she didn't use the same chocolate that she used. She became all consumed by this negative narrative that she... It wasn't good enough. And she put herself into such a bad mood, she ended up leaving the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, you know, I was reading that and I was like, geez, That's, you know, and, and we can use that example for everything. If things don't, and things are never going to go our way, life isn't perfect all of the time, you know, and people aren't perfect. And if we allow ourselves to become all consumed by the things that don't go our way all of the time, we would probably be spend a lot of time in that negative self-critiquing and allowing it to navigate our mood. And it's important to realise, I suppose, that not every situation is perfect. Nobody is perfect.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good example.
And isn't the worst part about it that you can pick fault
with everything.
Yeah, so if you get into that space.
Yeah, and you start it all.
Yeah, you do it about every single thing. Like, no matter what achievement you've made, what nice gesture you've done for someone, like making the cake. If she organised the whole birthday party and, you know, it was a big surprise, did the cake, the balloons, the everything.
Yeah.
You didn't have the chocolate. Like, you know?
Yeah.
No matter what, I don't know. If you get into, it's very easy to see that when you get into that frame of thinking, how it can...
It is, and it applies to every area of our lives, do you know what I mean? Even work. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get into that and you make a mistake... And it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it's not. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody makes mistakes. And it's in that, having self-compassion. Okay. I've made a mistake. It's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. Relatable to other people. Give yourself a bit of kindness and compassion that you need in that difficult moment. And bringing mindfulness in that, I'm not going to become all consumed by this and let myself go in the negative narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's self-compassion.
Yeah.
I even find it with the teaching. You know, like when we do an evaluation of a module and, you know, like you could have out of 100, you could have 99 going, yeah, great. And you could have one that would say, didn't like X, you know, and you nearly zone in on the one.
On the one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it kind of stays going around your head. And it's like you almost dismissed the 99 that were like, yeah, no, this was really great. Thanks very much.
Mm.
It's really interesting.
Really, like when we got the feedback for the last module that we did, like we had both read it individually because it was sent via email, we'll say. But then I remember we were talking about it and you said to me, do you see the feedback? How do you find it? And I was like, yeah. And I went to the one, with the two of us went to the one thing being like, how will we improve on this for the next instead of even acknowledge. I don't think we even spoke about the positive.
No, I don't think we even acknowledged it. I think we went straight into, and that's happening a bit in society even now. It's like the next thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to going, you know what, they were great students and we loved talking to them and it was fantastic. Yeah. And to take that space to just say, okay, job well done. There's more to do, but like that's really interesting.
I actually did really study the one that I think that based on, I can't remember the exact details of it, but basically in essence the main message was that we find it easier to automate to the negative. Our brains find it easier. I think actually it may be that, is it to do with threat
or surviving?
That surviving, that we focus on that, and that's why we automate the negative automatically, and we can change it. But it's not really our fault that it happens. Do you know what I mean? It's just that's the way that we're wired. That's exactly it. It's interesting. Yeah. Very complex.
No, I really I just really like even when you hear the word self-compassion, like, you know, when we first spoke about, because I suppose our listeners don't know, myself and Chloe are really good friends. We grew up together. And, but when you first mentioned it, like even when you're thinking about the word self-compassion, you're like, it's like, it's just the terminology alone just gets you really thinking about, right, this is something that I can do for myself.
Yeah.
You know, even within your friends, your family, your relationships, well, obviously it's important to be compassionate to each other. Of course.
Yeah.
But like, no matter how compassionate people are to me or how much like empathy they show me, anything like that, it doesn't really, if I'm not practicing it for myself or if I don't feel that way, my own feelings towards myself and what I'm doing, it matters so much more and they're going to impact me much more.
100%.
So it's just hugely important.
It is, yeah, absolutely. And even on that, you know, if for instance there's a certain body part that you don't like and you're continually telling yourself, I hate this part of my body, and somebody is repeatedly complimenting you, you have this negative core belief that you hate this part of your body and this part of your body isn't good enough. And no matter how many times somebody else tells you, you're not going to be listening to them until you start to break that negative core belief down yourself. And that's self-kindness. But absolutely agree with
it's
you
all linked,
it's like, all linked. And it starts from the inside out. Like, I'm a big believer in that you, the inner work. When you work on the inside, I use the analogy of a tree all the time with uni, but when you work from the inside out, you blossom. And when you nourish a tree from the inside, or when you nourish a tree, it blossoms from the inside out. And that's like ourselves, you know, when we do work on ourselves, you can blossom. And you, with that negative narrative, I think that we can halt ourselves from our full potential, our full ability to self-grow, because we're saying, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. No way. I'm not doing enough in this area. And you become self-limiting. You know what I mean?
That's very true.
And until you start to break down these negative core beliefs that you may have ingrained from whatever, you are probably, you're halting yourself from achieving your full potential, you know? And it's just to start chipping away at those. And I touch on that in the journal, just to start chipping away at negative core beliefs. But it's so important.
There's like a choice here, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Like, it's a, like almost like a mindful moment where you're going to make a choice to be more self-compassionate.
Exactly.
And that you do sometimes. I think, if you're caught up in the busyness of life, you miss that you're not being self-compassionate.
Absolutely.
And you don't always hear the way that you talk about yourself. It's really until somebody gives you that little piece of feedback, say, gosh, you're very hard on yourself, that you then realize, I am actually very hard on yourself. Where's that coming from? Or that's interesting, I think.
And that's actually the first pillar to self-compassion. So there's three pillars.
Here you are.
That's a nice segue into it. Yeah.
Know what I'm talking about.
So it's mindfulness is the first pillar. And the reason that that is the first pillar is because it's increasing awareness to how you're feeling, where you're feeling it in your body, you know, doing those mindful body scans to say, okay, I'm being really hard on myself right now. I'm saying, Chloe, you're not doing enough. And I'm saying, okay, I'm feeling this in my chest a little bit. And that's the first pillar that I delve into in the journal, because to be self-compassionate, you need to have that awareness for what's going on and the narrative. And then the second pillar is self-kindness. So I mentioned that is challenging negative core beliefs that you may have ingrained. So I'll touch on this in the backstory, but for me, one negative core belief that I had ingrained was that I'm not social enough. And the way that I challenged this negative core belief was I started writing down examples of where I displayed a positive quality yesterday, the day before.
Okay.
And then I'd align that positive quality. And Niamh and I would go for walks most mornings, and I would say, I met my friend Niamh for a walk. And then my positive quality, I am social. And that's all you need, is to start chipping away bit by bit at those negative core beliefs that you may have ingrained, and saying, okay, there's actually evidence here that maybe I am social. And maybe I do have that bit of social, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that for me, I just kept chipping away at it. And I was like, I am really social, you know? And sometimes we can just become wrapped up in these negative core beliefs, and they become really self-limiting. And, you know, that's all you need, is that to display evidence that that belief isn't 100% true. And you start chipping away at it. And then the third pillar is connectedness. So that's that relating to other humans. I'm not alone through difficulty. Everybody goes through difficulty throughout their lifetime. I don't have control over everything, because we don't. And too often external situations impact our mood and determine it. And, you know, in that pillar within the journal, I ask, like I said, how would you speak to a friend in the same situation? So it's relating to others and increasing that common humanity. That's what it's referred to in the literature. So they're the three pillars: mindfulness, self-kindness and connectedness. And they come together to form the concept of self-compassion. So it's something that we can learn, but I suppose it's just to break it down. And I think that it's fine to say, turn your kindness inward. How do you do that?
Yeah, exactly.
And the journal. And that's why I've developed the journal. It's guided to bring you through the process of mindfulness, self-kindness and connectedness.
So will you tell the listeners a little bit about the journal, that, you know, and you can tell them where they can find it too, but just tell them what it is and why they might be interested in it.
Yeah. So like, I suppose if you resonate with, you know, I have these negative self-beliefs, I feel when I'm going through a difficult time, it's all about me and I'm just focused on this difficulty, it's all consuming. If you want to improve mindfulness, the journal is for you. Do you know? And I think if you want to improve self-awareness, it's a really good tool to do this. And it's called Your Self-Scribbler. That's the name of the journal.
Nice.
Your Self-Scribbler, because obviously it's all about an individual experience. And in the beginning of the journal, I go through plenty of examples. There's lots of examples that you can draw from. There's a wheel of emotion, because I know that mindfulness sometimes can be a bit, what does that mean?
And I think people
are like, what does that mean? And I included a wheel of emotion with lots of terms of what you might be feeling or whatever. So lots of examples throughout the three sections, and then you're brought into your blank journal entries. It's not dated, but I would encourage, you know, this is like anything. It's like you know, exercise, you obtain optimal benefits if you're doing it frequently. So I would encourage frequent use of the journal for sure, but definitely 3 to 5 times a week to really start to get into the swing of it. And don't get me wrong, it takes work. Like I've done this, but I still find myself, I'm looking in the mirror, oh, I don't like that. And I'm saying, Chloe, stop that thought now. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it definitely takes work, but oh my God, is it worth it? And when you learn self-compassion, it's a tool to deal with difficulty. Difficult emotions, and like we all experience them, be it that it's trauma like I had, or you know, grief, or be it that it's work stress day to day. Like sometimes you just need to say it's okay.
Yeah,
everybody goes through this, I'm gonna be fine. And just taking that moment to give yourself compassion, and on Compassionate Co on the Instagram I put up actually a mantra that you can say to yourself when you are dealing with those difficult thoughts and difficult emotions. But that is what is delved into in the journal, and I love it. I'm so passionate about it because it works really and truly. When you learn self-compassion, it, you know, the literature shows it, it leads to increased happiness, increased life satisfaction. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
It
and
does.
Where can readers, or listeners, sorry, and writers, where can they find it?
Just anyone
at all.
Yeah. So I sell the journals online. www.compassionate-co.com is the name of the website.
We'll put that in the
Cool, perfect. And obviously then I'm on Instagram, Compassionate Co, Facebook, Compassionate Co, and LinkedIn as well, Compassionate Co. Yeah, so the same in the three channels.
What I think is really important here as well, and I'm taking just a little bit step back to what you said there, Chloe, but what can be, I would assume, damaging to something like this as well, and I see it sometimes when people compare their grief or their struggles. You know, I think it's an easy thing to fall into when you're feeling, you know, not 100% for whatever reason it is, and you're saying, but like, I should be fine because X is going through this and Y is going through this. And I know sometimes something, you know, substantial happens in our lives and we say, okay, what I was worrying about last week actually isn't that bad, and that's fair enough. But everyone, as you've said before, Chloe, like everyone is going through difficulties. Absolutely. And everyone will go through difficulties at some stage in their life. We all hope that we won't go through significant difficulties. But I think that's an important part of this as well. Just because it's not a horrendous event doesn't mean that we can't benefit from this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that it's all relative to individuals. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're always going to have someone you can compare yourself to that's going through something worse or something less. And I think that this is individual. And this is something that you can learn to cope with whatever difficulty you are dealing with. And it's all, you know, no difficult thought or emotion should be belittled. And that's the self-critiquing. I shouldn't be feeling like this. It's, oh, somebody else is going through something way worse. It's to validate that you are allowed to feel that, and it's okay to feel that. Do you know what I mean? And to give yourself that compassion rather than, I shouldn't be feeling like this. It's not helpful at all to engage in those types of discussion with yourself. So,
and I really like the way that you frame it as a skill as
it
well.
Is, yeah.
I was actually thinking about you the last day because I was listening to something and they were talking about you know, just it was about like being in your 20s or your early 30s and, you know, this kind of not knowing what you want to do and, you know, just being unsure of what direction you want to take your life in and so on. They were talking about the potential, they were talking about all the positives of moving away, but also the potential as well that you could be moving away or doing and making some big move, really running away from something else. And regardless of where you are in the world or what you're doing, you have you and you have your own mind.
That's it.
And that's what you have with you. Like, I suppose if you're not being self-compassionate, for example, and you're trying to get out of a situation you're feeling negative about, you will still be not being self-compassionate when you're in a different situation. So I love how you frame it as a skill.
It is,
no matter where you are or what difficulties you're facing,
what you're going through,
you have that.
Absolutely. And it just, that's why I say it's a, like, it's to have it in your coping mechanism belt. Like, it's just because we all have so much difficulty throughout our lives. We do, you know what I mean? So I think that to have it, and sometimes I think with self-compassion as well, when we do, you know, mindfulness and the self-kindness and connectedness, sometimes when you are practicing self-compassion, that's enough to just acknowledge that the feeling and that the emotion is there, and rather than suppressing and then it coming out in other ways and building and building and building and then exploding, sometimes all we just need is that acknowledgement and that self-acknowledgement. And like, I use the, it's like children, when a child falls and they're upset, they're having, you know, they're experiencing a difficult time, they come to mom or dad or guardian and they are caressed and it's okay. They release the emotion, the difficult situation is acknowledged and they go and they forget about it. Sometimes we just need that, you know, yeah. And we need that as adults as well, and we don't give ourselves enough of it, and this allows you to do that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, it allows mm-hmm. you to learn that and to give yourself that when you are going through difficult times or difficult emotions.
There's a piece in it too about that nothing is forever, it passes, and you just absolutely. Need to help yourself help it pass. That's mm-hmm. the yeah. other, you know,
yeah, allow to be with it. And you know, I'm not saying that self-compassion is going to be make you happy all of the time, it's, you know, but it's to allow yourself to feel whatever you're feeling, you know what I mean, be it happiness, be it sadness, be it whatever. And go with what you need at that time, mm-hmm. you know.
So what brought you to this? I mean, it's a big thing to take on top of work. So and you're hugely passionate about it.
Yeah.
So do you want to give us a sense of what brought you to thinking like this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So my interest in mental health stemmed from personal experience. So I was in a very serious car accident where I nearly lost my life. It was almost 7 years ago now at this point. After that, you know, obviously the accident itself was really traumatic, severe psychological trauma from it, but I had a huge amount of physical injury.
Okay.
And that physical injury was, I had a lot of broken bones throughout my body. I broke my back. I perforated my ileum. So that's a small bowel. That is a 30% survival rate. So, you know, my body was sent. I talk about the fight and flight response, and I think that that's a term that people are becoming more familiar with from social media. But I was sent so far into that. That there was huge amounts of psychological trauma.
Wow, that's awful.
And the accident, and then the period of time that followed. It was a prolonged period of, you know, we don't know if you're going to survive. We don't know if you're going to be paralysed. This was the narrative that was going on. So I was up there in that fight or flight for such a long time, and thankfully I survived. I'm not paralysed, and I came out relatively okay, but a lot of physical aids, you know, wheelchair, Zimmer frame, a lot afterwards. And really, it turned my life upside down. Mm-hmm. It did. And, you know, when I did overcome the physical injury, you know, even when I was discharged out of hospital with those physical aids, I really saw a huge decline in my mental health. And in hindsight, when I look back now, it was already there when I was in hospital, you know, flashbacks and not being able to sleep and completely on edge all of the time. But when I, in the months that followed, it really took a huge turn. It did. And it was about 4.5 months afterwards. And I was at the point now where I was really struggling to get out of bed. Like it was, but I had no words for this. I was 19. I didn't know. I didn't have the vocab for it.
Yeah.
And my parents, obviously, of course, were frightened out of their lives. You know what I mean? Yeah, really, really difficult to watch. And they referred me to, or made an appointment with my GP, went and I started talk therapy. I started counselling 3 times a week. It was really, really intense. Mm-hmm. And I was subsequently referred to a psychiatrist. When I was referred to that psychiatrist, I received the diagnosis I had severe depression and severe post-traumatic stress disorder. So even when I got those diagnoses, I didn't really, you know, I was like, yeah, I knew that I felt really different. But the only way that I could, you know, that I could put words in it, I was telling my parents, I just feel like a different person. I felt like I was lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had been that person that I was so social, so bubbly. I was just finished first year of college, going into second year. I was, you know, loved going out all the time, socialising, a real, you know, outgoing person. And I suddenly became someone that I felt low all of the time. My emotion was really, really heightened. I found it very hard to cope with day-to-day difficulty and day-to-day emotions. And it festered into so many areas of my life. When I went back to college in second year, my experience in second year versus first was completely different in that I didn't really make any friends. One friend was what I made, and versus the year before, I had a huge amount. I started having panic attacks when I was in Cork, you know, and it was just throughout the whole thing, it was a really, really hard experience. And I just, not that I came to terms, I came to accept, but I came around to that I now was a different person because of this experience. I was really fearful all of the time, really anxious. Felt really low all of the time, really irritable, and I thought that was now who I was. So this went on for about 4 years and I really struggled. All of this time I was going to counselling and doing everything that I could have really wanted to get back to that person that I was before. But all I was doing with the counselling was the glass was, we'll say, 100% full of liquid. And I was just emptying out I was tipping it all the time, but it would, because I wasn't getting the intervention that I needed, which was cognitive behavioural therapy, I now know, I was just emptying out rather than getting the tools to cope with.
Okay.
So went on, just came to terms with this is now who I am, this is Chloe now. And, you know, my mom and dad could see that I was really frustrated with this. And my mom said to me, look, one day, this is about 4 years after the accident, would you try CBT? And I said, I'll try anything.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'll try absolutely fair anything. Enough. So I went and, oh my God, it changed my life. It mm-hmm. really and truly did. And initially when we went, we did a lot of EDMR, which is like this, mm-hmm. I don't know what it stands for, but basically you have these toggles in your hands and you close your eyes and when the vibrations are in your hand, your eyes are going over and back. And what it does is it induces you into an REM sleep. So it brings images to the forefront of your mind that you haven't dealt with and that need processing.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds bizarre, but it's amazing. It really is. And did a lot of that initially. And then we started working really hard on mindfulness, bringing that awareness to how you feel, where you're feeling it in your body. We worked on that for months. And my therapist, she'd send me home a lot of homework. And I worked really, really hard on it because I really wanted to change or to get back to who I was before. And she said to me, when, you know, we were talking about mindfulness and she said it's really important to work on this. And I read a book since and they had the analogy of a sky. And in the book, it said that when you're mindful, you are the sky and you're looking down and all of these purple birds floating over and back. And the purple birds represent your thought and emotion. But rather than embodying each bird, you are looking down with a conscious awareness that they're there, but you're not embodying each bird. And I eventually started to feel, okay, I feel like I am looking down. I feel like I'm seeing that this is happening. I'm feeling where it is in my body, bringing an awareness, but I'm not embodying anymore. Mindfulness, that mm-hmm. was the first thing. Secondly, we started working on self-kindness. And how I did that was literally what I have in the journal, the evidence from the day before, or the positive quality associated with that evidence. And like that, the negative core beliefs that I had ingrained in myself was I'm not social, I'm withdrawn, I am really irritable, I'm low all of the time. But I started to break them down using evidence from the day before. Like I said, Niamh, the example that I pulled down with you, I went for a walk with Niamh, maybe I am a little bit social. And I started chipping away at that. And I did that persistently. I was hooked on it. I was doing it every day. And connectedness then, you know, she really went through, she kept saying to me, you're not in control of everything. You don't have control of everything. And Chloe, it is okay that you are feeling all of these things. Do you realise the tremendous psychological trauma that you were left with as a result of all of this? You nearly lost your life. You know what I mean? It was, and so I started to feel a bit better. I started to feel a bit lighter. And I remember we went on a walk, Niamh, and I said to you, Niamh, I think this is the first time in the last 5 years that I felt like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that. Yeah. And you were like, what do you mean? And I was like, I started to feel like myself again. And I became really interested in this. And I said, like, what is this? This is amazing. You know what I mean? And I started doing a bit of research. And what I now know is self-compassion, mindfulness, mm-hmm. self-kindness and connectedness. And the end of 2022, I got the news that I needed another spinal surgery. And I was devastated. I really was. And I started to, you know, I was like, look, it's okay to feel this. I gave myself everything that I needed, self-compassion. And I said, look, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to get a journal that focuses on self-compassion. And I'll use this throughout the whole experience because I know what's coming is going to be really hard. And there wasn't one. And I was like, okay, right, so what'll I? So I started drafting one and I sent it on to my therapist. And I said, what do you think? And I said, you know, my ma, just tell me. And she said, I'm taking the first ticket when you're on the Late Late Show.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I was laughing. But,
well, I'll take the second one now, just after hearing that story.
it just took flight. And that's where it came from. Like, the passion behind Compassionate Co, it's because I've done it. And I think that if it, you know, I received these diagnoses, the depression and the PTSD, and for me to deal with all of the residual symptoms I had day to day from that, self-compassion allowed me to do that. Being mindful that, okay, I am feeling this way, but I am not this way. And I had control over how I reacted to the emotions that I was feeling. I broke down the negative core beliefs that I had about myself. And then I reiterated, I'm not alone in this. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be really struggling at the moment because you've been through a really hard time.
Yeah.
And it literally just changed my life. It really did. And I don't say that lightly. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, because if it can help me, like I say, some of that, you know, I was on that really far end side of the psychological trauma scale, and I have regained my life, my happiness. I can't describe the impact that it has had. Imagine the impact that it can have for people day to day. When they're feeling difficult emotions, they allow themselves to feel, they start breaking down those negative core beliefs and self-critiquing voice that they have in their head. And all throughout that time, I taught myself, oh, Chloe, you're not doing enough. You're not socialising enough. You're not, you know, making enough of an effort with the friends in college. Not for a second giving myself a bit of compassion that PTSD, that's what happens when you are diagnosed with that. You become really withdrawn in that. So it's something that I'm really passionate about from experience. Mm-hmm. And it works. Oh my God, does it work? And I want, you know, the main objective of Compassion Co, like I said in the beginning, to bring awareness to the concept of self-compassion.
Yeah.
And if people can learn it, become familiar with it, you know, I said that the literature shows that it leads to increased happiness, increased life satisfaction. Mm. It does. It absolutely does. Being kinder to ourselves, that sense of connection with everybody else, and we're not alone, and bringing that awareness to how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful.
Mm.
It really is.
I can't imagine what it must be like to go through something like that. That's just so huge.
Huge. Yeah, it was horrendous, I'm not going to lie. Do you know what I mean? It was really, really scary, and the fear that I felt, you know. And, you know, I know I say being 19, it doesn't really matter if it's any age, you know. It was, you know, the series of events where we don't know where you're going to make it. You know, it was really serious. I said another 4 hours and I would have been gone. That was the reality of it. And then when I got over that, it was, are you going to have a permanent stoma? When I got over that, it was, you have a serious infection. Again, we don't know how to treat this. We've one antibiotic left to do. And if this doesn't work, we don't know what we're going to do here. And then when I eventually got all over that, you know, and in the midst of all this, I had an unstable fracture in my back. So, you know, it's fun, like the polar opposites in this situation. I was in this peak fight or flight all of the time. And I was told, Chloe, you have to stay still.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And because of the nature of the injury in your back, if you move, you are probably going to be paralysed. And that burden on my shoulders.
Oh, awful. You wouldn't want to breathe.
That's awful. Petrified.
And I had to lay in the flat of my back for almost 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 5 weeks. So it was, you know, the mental burden of that as well. But the whole situation, it was really hard. It was really, really difficult. And it was horrendous. Like, even you were there for the whole step of the, for every step of the way with it. Like, you know, it's been really hard to watch as well, you know, so. I know we've spoken about this,
yeah.
And for your family too, for your parents, everybody, like there's a trauma there for everyone. That's in that space.
Yeah. But thankfully, I've come out, and you know, a lot of people don't. That's something that I could probably go into another day is the trauma after accidents. People will focus a lot on the physical aspects of things, but the mental burden that comes with it is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And like that for people that are involved, family, friends, watching, being, experiencing, like it's tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous. Yeah.
I also, there's another piece, I suppose, and it's just around what a family goes through when this happens, when an accident like this happens and someone survives, but also when they don't. I'm just thinking of my own family and the trauma that you just don't know where to go with it. So what I'm loving about what you're saying, I'm so sorry it's happened. But that you had that you have this kindness that you want to then share with other people to be kind and to help them. Mm-hmm. I'm just blown away. I've tingled from the minute I didn't know your story. So just for the listeners to know, this is my first time hearing it, but I'm really moved by it. It's tapping into some of the pieces I know from a distance. I don't know it closely, but that your strength and your kindness towards others as a result of it is blowing me away. I just want to say that to you.
Yeah,
that's it.
Very moved by that.
It's taking something awful and doing as much good as you possibly can with
it.
Not just for yourself, but trying to share that then as well.
Yeah. And I actually said this to you on the before, that I feel like I wouldn't go through the situation again. It was horrendous. But I almost feel like, you know, and I've said this to a few people, I feel like it was almost for something.
Yeah.
If it's going to help other people and if it's going to bring in awareness, and there's so many people messaging me saying, oh my God, like even that I use the example of the child the last day on my stories on Instagram. We all need caressing in difficult times. Mm. And a woman messaged me, she was like, that's just like an aha moment. I do this with my kids, but I don't do it to myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's something that sometimes I think you just need to hear these things.
Mm.
And it's, we all know them, but it's just to say, oh yeah, and how do I do that? You know, and it's to break down how you do it. But I do feel, this year I feel like everything has kind of come together for me, you know, all of the horrendous aftermath of and the struggle after the accident. And, you know, obviously then my research skills, and I wasn't 100% sure what area of public health I wanted to go into, and I ended up going into health research heavily, and being able to interpret all of the literature that's out there, and you know, while this the journal contents obviously are based on my own experience, they do align with the literature, the evidence base is there, a lot of literature done on it, and being able to draw on those skills to make it all come together, you know, and to use it then to filter into mental health promotion.
Yeah, but it's really practical, and I know we've talked about the journal, but it's pragmatic, so it gets you to think about, it goes, I think I said this to you, it goes a layer deeper.
It does.
Because it asks you to look for an example of what you're saying, or to look for an example where you were working on what you want to work at, and it gives you a sense of achievement as you do it. I think that's really cool, actually.
Yeah, 100%. It does ask you, the journal definitely does ask you to dig deeper, and the concept, you know, and when you do start to feel the benefits of it, you know, the mindfulness, self-kindness and connectedness, when you do start to become self-compassionate, you say, geez, I'm able to do this. Mm-hmm, and, you know, it's a real sense of, there's a real sense of fulfillment when you do learn it as a concept, because like you can use it as a tool to self-regulate. And I think that, you know, there's been a lot of, there's been some RTTs on mindful self-compassion programs, and they found that people that work on self-compassion have an increased ability to emotionally regulate, because I suppose you're tapped into what you are feeling and looking at the emotions from the sky down. And
makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It does. It makes perfect sense. Does. Yeah, but it's just to piece it together and to break it down. Yeah.
It is. But I think there is an important part around this, but probably a bit of consistency as well. Like, it's like, I mean, I'm on my way towards, I'm using the journal, I'm on my way towards it, and I'm loving it. Great. I really am. And you know that.
Yeah.
But like, I can see sometimes in this or even other things, because breath work, I know we've spoken about, like, we can chat a little bit about that, because you're trained to be a breath work facilitator as well. But like, even when I've tried practicing that, if I don't do these things that I know that ground me and that I know help me to be more mindful, to be more self-compassionate, if I feel I haven't, you know, cause if I've had a busy week or something and I've just been like, oh, I'll put that away now, I won't bother doing that, I'm tired now, I'm going to go to sleep, or I'm going to whatever, the following week I'll feel much worse, and I'd be more irritable, or you know, and I can see that in myself when I don't do these things. So I think there's a piece about it as well of, like, it probably won't be the day you start doing it, you know, that it's going to,
you won't be overwhelmed. Exactly. I am so compassionate. There definitely is work in it, but it is really, it's worth it, you know. And like I mentioned that earlier, that I would say as frequently as you can, but definitely three to five times a week, I would encourage, just for, you know, just to really get into it. And like, it's like anything, you know, the more frequent you do it, the better. And on that, Niamh, I would just say, you know, I actually said this as well on Instagram before, that I think that for a new habit, attach it to something you already have in place. So for instance, with us, we go for a walk every morning at 7:30. You could set the alarm for 10 past, get up, do a journal entry or do your breath work, whatever else you're thinking or whatever you want to integrate into your daily life. And it does make it a little bit easier to integrate that. For me, my journaling was in the evening time. That was something that I didn't have, and I started just integrating it. And attaching it to a habit that's already in place is really effective.
That's a very good piece of
technique.
Advice.
And that makes it more sustainable then, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's something that you're going to continue to do rather than just give yourself one boost of kind of and forget about it again. You
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So I'm struck with your journey, and there's such a resilience in it. And I mean, where did you get, where does that come from? There's a strong survival, positive focused piece to you as a result of your experience. But some people don't. Some people don't come back up from PTSD. So where do you think that comes from in you?
I think that as a person, I've just always been driven. Even when I was growing up as a teenager in school, I was driving for good marks. And then when I did really take up, I got into running when I was in fifth year. And I was doing long distance running before I was in the accident. I was running 10K, and that was something I was really committed to. I think that that's something that it's probably a personality thing with me. Do you know what I mean? I just had that drive. And even when I was feeling, even after the accident, when I was feeling that low on that, I always wanted, I had that need, I had that want. I wanted to get back to the way I was. I wanted to get back to who I knew I was. And it's probably stubbornness, to be honest.
Well, that's okay.
I didn't want to accept that I now was this new person that I didn't really know. So I think it's personality with me. And that, just drive. It's always been something that I have been, have had ingrained in me, I suppose, even since I was a child. Never gave up.
Huge. I just think it's so important for us as human beings in the world to bring our experience to making it better for other people.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, what an amazing world we would have if we all did that. So that's really coming out from what you're trying to do here, which I really like.
Absolutely.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Delighted.
I know, I do. I just think there's so many, you know, there's so many times where we can help other people by making something of the experience that we have.
Yeah.
And there's a healing piece in it too, isn't there? Like to do something with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Compassion Co, it just gives me, you know, and I said this to my dad, I've never felt so passionate about something.
It's cool.
And it's because it's my learned experience as well. You know what I mean? And, you know, obviously I know that it works and all that, but I want to help other people. Like, I want, you know, and I want people to learn that they can self-help by doing this. And it's a tool that you can learn. And it's just amazing. It really, it is, you know. And I think that the passion behind it, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just passion. It's research and it's a knowledge base from health promotion. There's quite a bit behind it. You know, it's
there
a really
is.
Good blend to have.
Yeah,
it's quite special.
Yeah. And that was really important, like my research background, to have everything aligned with the evidence and making sure that it was strong evidence. And I knew then, I was like, yeah, I'm onto something here, like this works, you know, like there's been RCTs done on this. And that, while I knew it worked in me, that gave it that further layer of validation for me there was the research to back it up, you know. Passion paired with expertise.
Yeah, we like it. Passion paired with expertise.
Yeah,
we like it.
So,
but you are, like, you just light up. Like, I remember the first time you said to me, we were in your sitting room. But
I was
like,
post recovery. I was like, Niamh, this is my new project.
Yeah, but it was like you opened your mouth. You could just see that everything had just come. All of the ideas around it came together, and you were just like, you could actually see your face lighting up talking about it. And I was just like, jaw dropped, and I was like, I love it. Like,
and it's probably the public health and health promotion coming out in me as well. You know, health behaviour change and empowering people to do it. And that's really important.
But that's it. That's what you say. Like, it's everything. It's all your experiences, your knowledge and your expertise. And it's everything coming together in
that's
one.
That's it. Yeah. So, it's exciting.
So what's next for Compassionate Co? I know, as I said just a little bit earlier, I know that you're working on doing some breathwork facilitation as well.
I am.
That's
so
one thing.
The breathwork is, I've recently trained in that. That was something that I would have done myself, simplistic techniques, but it was really helpful just to calm down the emotional state if you were feeling really overwhelmed. And I trained in that recently. So I'm going to be running classes the end of August, start of September. Yeah, a course. Potential pop-up classes throughout the summer as well in Killarney. Breathwork is excellent for improving mindfulness.
Yeah. Would you tell us a little bit about, just in case people aren't familiar with it?
Absolutely.
So it's basically bringing a conscious awareness to our breath. And in the world that we live in today, our brains are permanently in overdrive mode. We're always in that go, go, go. And we're thinking about the next thing and what we need to do, what we haven't done, whatever. So breathwork, it's It encourages you to sit in the present moment. Do some mindful body scans, really bring awareness to our bodies and to ourselves. And it is primarily focusing on the breath, obviously. And it's a little bit different to, breathwork is a little broader than meditation because, you know, there's varying breathwork techniques. We can use breathwork for energizing. We can use breathwork, we can do some breathwork retention. So to challenge our breath, to increase our breathing activity during exercise. Mm-hmm. And then we can also use it for deep relaxation. And it's a really good technique towards improving mindfulness because it's for not forcing you, it's asking you to go into your body and to bring awareness to what's going on in your body in that moment. So it's guided and it brings you through improving mindfulness, I suppose. So it'll be, that's really the concept that it focuses on. Mm-hmm. And that it draws on in relation to self-compassion.
And isn't it amazing how shallow we breathe and yeah. we don't even realise mm-hmm. it?
Yeah,
you know, we have
it,
no idea yeah. until you really begin to reflect on it or you begin to pay attention to it, you realise.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm at that like the up here.
Yeah, and yeah. we all breathe like that. We all breathe from, you know, our chests and yeah. we should be breathing from our diaphragm ideally. And that's actually a core, a fundamental part of breathwork is bringing that awareness to the mechanism of breath. To take a profound breath and mm-hmm. really using that diaphragm to open up the lungs and exhale yeah. out, you know, and it's really powerful. Mm. It really is. It's a really good technique towards improving yeah. mindfulness to calm down that nervous system if you're engaging in long, slow, deep, for example. It's a breathwork technique. And it would make you think, you know, about like that. It just brings that awareness to, oh, I'm breathing really shallow right now, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm feeling stressed and the shallow breath isn't really helping me. So yeah. let's take a long, slow, deep breath mm-hmm. and really calm yourself down, you know. So yeah. it's excellent. It's really, really good. I'm, like I said, recently trained and looking forward to the classes at the end of the summer. So that's something that's on the yeah. horizon for a compassionate yeah. co. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Down in the kingdom, obviously.
Down in the kingdom, yeah. We wouldn't be anywhere else.
I'm delighted to hear that. No, yeah. I think they're
yeah. looking forward to it. I think it'd be amazing. I think yeah. there's so much... Like, I think breathwork can do so much for you. Like,
yeah.
even this isn't even, well, I suppose it is, I suppose, breathwork, but it's the smallest thing ever. Over lockdown, I had never done yoga and I just went on such a yoga kick over lockdown. Because, yeah. you know, we were just trying to get
everything.
Something, yeah, that'd make you feel that you weren't sat down all day or, you know, just stretch yourself out and whatever. So I was mad doing it, but I was doing it with, I used to just watch YouTube videos from Yoga with Adrienne.
Oh yeah, she's really good.
But she is, but she always says something like not in every video or anything, but like she always says, you know, take the deepest breath you've taken all day.
Yeah.
And that's something that I always do. If I'm finding like it's such a small thing, and that was from yoga, as I'm saying, it's not even breath work, but like if I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed or if I'm just feeling like, you know, you just need some sort of release or just to reground yourself or whatever, it's like, take the deepest breath you've taken all day. And if you're having the worst day in the world and you have to do it three times, the third time can still be the deepest breath that you've taken all day. You can always do it, you know, and it's just literally 3 seconds or, you know, whatever, however long it takes. Even something as small as that can make such a difference.
Yeah.
Not to mind, you know, the actual... practices that come with breathwork.
I know they're amazing, really and truly they are. And again, that's another tool.
Yeah.
Like it is, it touches on self-compassion, but it's a really good tool to learn, you know. And I have posted some breathwork techniques on Compassionate Co, and I've had, you know, a health and wellbeing coordinator in the school. She's always sharing it. She has a career plan page. My career plan is the name of her page. And she... to be sharing, saying, oh, this is really good for exam stress. And, you know, just
That's great.
Because you can, you know, become really overwhelmed in those kind of situations. Mm. And it's really good just to have that thing for four.
Yeah.
Four for four, out for four.
Yeah.
You know, it's, really, really good thing to learn.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited for that and to see
where Compassionate Co goes
because the journal is only part of a bigger conversation that you're opening up, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm actually starting a mindful self-compassion course.
In your spare time.
In 2 weeks' time. So as if I haven't enough going on. But no, I've break from the master's for 3 months. So I'm starting that over the summer.
Brilliant.
So I'm really looking forward to delving deeper into it. And let's see what has to
I'm wishing you the very, very best with that. I think it's it's powerful work, and I mean that. You know, I mean that word. It's really, it is powerful for our lives to take that space and to reflect and to breathe. Absolutely. And to think and to feel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's really cool.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
Okay, all right, we go into our three questions.
Let's go for it, boss.
Oh yeah.
Right, a leader. I forgot to tell Chloe about the questions. Oh, yeah.
I know, we did that to the bonus as well. They were like, okay. Yeah, okay,
but anyway.
Yeah.
A leader that inspires you and why?
So I think I'd have to go with Christian Neff on this. She is a lady that has done huge amounts of research on self-compassion.
Okay.
And she really is the leader in the field. She would 100% be a leader that inspires me. And she has actually developed a mindful self-compassion program. So she's definitely my answer for that. She's amazing. Yeah, so much research done on it. And she opened up the field of it, really, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to look her up, yeah.
Do. Mm. Her papers are excellent. Yeah.
So when you look back over your journey so far, I think the probably answer to this might be no, because it sounds amazing what you've done. But is there anything you'd do differently? Anything you'd change?
I think I just wish I learned self-compassion sooner. To be honest.
Yeah, fair point.
You know, I for years I just continued to self-critique, even though I was going through all of those different emotions. And if I had learned it sooner.
Yeah.
No, look. Yeah, I think that's my thing. I wouldn't change anything else, I don't think. Yeah, it's all, you know, while it has been a real bumpy road, it's been a huge learning curve.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's all part of the journey. It's cliche and all as it sounds. Yeah. It's true.
It's been my journey. You know? So it has led me to where I am today. So yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but self-compassion earlier, I think can many will relate to that.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one piece of advice that you would give to someone.
I would say follow compassion to go. And that's not giving myself, you know, but really, if you're interested in the concept, I do delve into it. I break down, you know, my content over on my social media over the next couple of weeks. It's breaking down the concept of self-compassion. And I give out really good, every Wednesday, I have a Wellbeing Wednesday. So I give out techniques on how you can improve self-compassion, you know, different breathwork techniques, etc. So challenging that negative inner self-critic, that's one that I posted as well. So if you're interested on embarking on the journey, give compassion a go, follow, and see if it's something that you'd be.
Yeah, absolutely. I second that.
Yeah.
I'll third it now. Yeah. And we put up the details with the episode and stuff like that, because I think it's, I completely agree with you. And I was talking to someone else about this recently, the pace of life.
It's,
everyone is hectic. You know, and we just need to find ways that help us stop up.
Absolutely. Bring us back to present.
Yeah, because we can't keep accelerating. We're just going to get, you know.
Yeah.
So I love anything that gets us back to ourselves. And I mean that, back to ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're trying to do. That's love it.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Chloe.
It's been fab. Thank you so much for having me on.
That's brilliant to have you.
We'll be watching this space with real interest and the developments, and hopefully doing a few classes, and wishing you absolutely every success
that
comes your way, because you completely deserve it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I already have a space saved in the Britwork.
Yeah. He is my first client in the door.
Yeah, brilliant. Knocking on the door, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chloe.
Brilliant.